You are listening to the Eyes on Conservation podcast, episode 135.
There's gotta be some hope. There's gotta be some hope. There's gotta be some way for you to send your dogs away and to leave the land.
Welcome to the Eyes on Conservation podcast. I'm your host, Serena Simons, and on this podcast, we've covered the events of Standing Rock in a number of ways, interviewing filmmakers, historians, rally marchers, and water protectors on the front lines. But today you will hear from a woman whose music has cemented a moment in history and created a reverberation of action on a global scale. Ray Zaragoza is a young, multi-talented activist at the forefront of the movement for indigenous rights and environmental justice. Her music has redefined the quote-unquote protest song and sparked meaningful dialogue around empathy for the earth as well as empathy for each other. Ray's music has been featured on various outlets like Daytrotter, Jam in the Van, Indian Country Media Network, and most recently by Cyndi Lauper on Spotify. We will hear clips from some of my favorite tracks, as well as Ray's words on the ties between culture and land and finding strength in womanhood through the power of song. I'd like to introduce Ray. She is an amazing artist, musician, woman, talent for people of color, the indigenous community, and I just am so excited to have her on the show.
Thank you. What a generous intro. thank you for having me.
I want to just start off, just talk a little bit about, I guess, your background and how long you've been singing, writing, and why you became a singer.
Sure. So my name is Ray Zaragoza. I live in Los Angeles, California. I'm from New York City. My heritage and my background means a lot to me. It has really shaped my whole experience living in this country, growing up in New York City, growing up here in the United States. So I always like to talk about it or start out with talking about it. But my dad is, he's indigenous. He's half Mexican and half Akame Otham tribe. And my mom is from Japan, and she's half Japanese, half Taiwanese. And so I'm very much a mixed race individual. And I think that experience has really shaped me as a musician and as a human being, just kind of walking the land as a person of color, as a mixed race individual, as an indigenous, someone who identifies very much as with my indigenous roots. And I write a lot of songs about it. And I've been writing songs since high school, pretty much, but I've been singing my whole life and performing my whole life and writing my whole life. I've been a singer-songwriter for the past 5 years. And yeah, so that's how I got here.
Wow. Growing up, how do you feel like you found your voice as a woman of color mm-hmm. and an artist?
Oh, yeah. You know what? I really think that that's something that happened far past what I would have ever considered growing up. Mm. I think I don't even feel like I really found my voice as a woman of color until the past year or two. And I definitely think that my music was a major part of finding that. And as I've kind of like peeled back the layers of that, I realized how much happened at a young age that really happened because of the way people looked at me, because mm-hmm. of the color of my skin. And it really is a huge reflection, and it can be very sad because the more you learn, the more you realize, why those things happened. I mean, just like the smallest thing, I remember, you know, me and my sister, we hated our brown eyes. We thought brown eyes are ugly because, you know, everyone wants green eyes. They want blue eyes. They want eyes that are different, you know, because well, you know, everyone in my family has brown eyes. And I'm like, I don't want brown eyes. That's boring. And so me and my sister in high school used to put color contacts on. Mm. And looking back, I'm like, you know, why is a color associated with beauty? There's beauty in every color. There's beauty in every eye color and every skin color. And just the fact that we felt that pressure from peers and from our society that we would be more beautiful if we changed the color of our eyes. I look back and I'm like, you know, I want to empower young people through my music, through my words, to know that, no, like, you are beautiful, like, the way you are. And, you know, Hollywood or media or, you know, just the mainstream thing that people think is beautiful, it is not really something that's true, you know. And when we have beauty in all of us, and as women of color, people of color, it can be a challenge to really identify with that and find that. And so, yeah, it's been a real journey to find that beauty that I identify with, both inner and outer beauty, because, you know, it can be a challenge.
Absolutely. And I think that's kind of why, I mean, one of the reasons why your music strikes such a chord with me, and I'm also multiracial. Mm-hmm. So yeah, having that identity crisis, kind of realizing it, but not being able to articulate it at a very
absolutely
young, formative age. Mm-hmm. And really, I think it's great that you found music as an outlet to express yourself that way, mm-hmm. and connect with other people that are also feeling that way. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I, you know, after your song, so we're going to talk a lot about a lot of things, but,
sure.
so kind of the song that really, I feel like, launched you into this whirlwind of, mm-hmm. of activism, of protest, of, environmental, rights was a song that you wrote called In the River. Mm-hmm. That song is so powerful. And I mean, I would love for you to talk about, you know, what went into making that song and creating that song.
Thank you so much for your kind words. It means so much to hear that. You know, I like, the inspiration is like a mutual thing. Like, it's like a back and forth. I always say that with people who admire my music, because I like feed off of that, you know. And then it's like, it's just incredible. Like, music, it's just like a circle of energy that we're just constantly exchanging. And so I really, really appreciate your kind words about my music. Anyway, so In the River, I wrote in September 2016, pretty much the day that the videos of the dogs being released onto water protectors started surfacing online. And that was kind of just like this straw that broke the camel's back for me. I had been watching everything from home about Standing Rock and what was happening. I had a lot of friends who were there and just kind of, you know, being kept posted about it. And it was very frustrating for me that hardly anyone in Los Angeles in my immediate community here knew what was going on, other than, you know, my indigenous community here. But like, my friends who aren't a part of that community had no idea. And I was constantly explaining it to people and constantly getting so worked up about it and being like, how do you not know this is happening? It's happening inside of our country. It's not happening far away. This is happening right in front of our very eyes and no one knows. And that day, just watching those videos and knowing that my friends were there, just, I completely broke down. I just started crying. I was just so broken up about it. And I felt so hopeless. I didn't really know what I could do to make a difference. And so I just started writing a song. And at first I started writing like a very angry song. Mm-hmm. I can't even remember how that song really went. But then eventually I kind of broke through that anger. And I wrote In the River, and it really kind of like came about very quickly. As soon as I started writing it, I think I wrote the whole song in like 25 minutes. Mm-hmm. And what really inspired me to write that chorus, like, in the river is our sisters and our brothers. I was watching this video online of the children, the youth of Standing Rock, swimming in the river. And it was just so beautiful. They're out for a swim.
In the river is our sisters and our brothers. We are camping out for each other. We are stronger when we band together. And we're standing up for the water. Don't poison the future away.
And, you know, like we need to treat our waters like we would be okay for our children to swim in them.
Mother Earth protects us all.
It's so sad how much contamination there is in different bodies of water all over the country, and people are getting sick because they're going swimming. And it's all man-made problems. This is, you know, this is something that is our fault, and the water is suffering and our children are suffering because of that. So basically I just had all these thoughts and emotions rushing through me. And then I wrote that song, and the next day I called my friend. I asked him to record it for me. We recorded the song. The next day my brother took his camera out, and we just drove out into like the desert, and we just recorded a little video of me singing it. And then I made a video the next day with facts about what was happening at Standing Rock. And we just put a little video together, and I uploaded it the next day. So this is like from like Thursday to Monday. And then on Monday I uploaded it, and overnight it had like hundreds of thousands of views. And I didn't really know how that happened. And I was just, it was overwhelming. And I was very grateful that people were starting to realize what was happening and that a video could make that possible.
We are stronger when we band together, and we're standing up for the water. Don't poison the future away.
So yeah, that's kind of just how it happened. And it was just, you know, social media definitely has been very helpful with getting the word out on a lot of Indigenous rights issues that people would never hear about because it's not in the mainstream media. So yeah, I think the awareness of Standing Rock really caught fire because of social media. And I'm grateful that my song, my video was able to contribute to that at the time.
And did you have any idea how, I guess, how much music can affect social change before that video
came? Yeah, I mean, I knew it, but I didn't embody it until I saw that happen, because like, I'm a huge Beatles fan. I'm a huge Joni Mitchell fan, Joan Baez fan. My whole life I've listened to classic rock music and have really felt the feeling of a movement, through songs, you know, and I'm a firm believer in getting out and just practicing freedom of speech and protesting, being a protester, being a protector. And every time people say to me like, oh, does it really help? Does it really make a difference? Does it really do this? Does it really do that? And especially if like a woman will ask me, and I'm like, do you have a job? Do you vote? Like, do you do this? Do you do that? Cause that's, you're exercising all of the rights that other women in past generations protested for you to have. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, I very much believe in the power of speaking up and having it make a difference. And music even furthers that, because I don't know, like music is just one of those, it's just a very universal language. I travel all over the world singing my songs, and people don't even speak the same language as me. And they can feel that, because music has a way of like capturing a frequency. And if you really like meditate and like hone in on that frequency of that song and like what you're trying to say, it can just completely transcend someone into that feeling. And you can almost, it's almost, you know, it's like opening up so much to someone and then having them open up back to you. And it can change minds. It can change worlds. It can change a lot. And I think a lot of times when we look back on some of the most powerful movements of our time, we associate a lot of it with the music of that time as well, which is incredible. And I think the reason why that is because almost every human being can react to music, even if it's like different genres or different this. I think there's something about music that just can completely transcend someone, which is why my favorite place to play music is at rallies. it's just like the most intoxicating feeling to play there. But yeah, you know, and I've been in situations where I've played music and people, you know, like sometimes like I'll get labeled as like a political singer-songwriter or like a, you know, like a protester or like an activist, and people that'll turn people off. They're like, oh, I don't want to be lectured. I don't want to have a speech. I'm here. I just want to enjoy some music. I don't want it to get political. And people are always saying that before they watch my set, and then they hear my set and they realize that it's really not political at all. It's just it's an experience. It's a personal experience and it's an observation. And but a lot of times I'll have people who like kind of show up at my shows or they're there with friends and they like look a little apprehensive. And then afterwards they come up to me and like give me a huge hug and they're like, thank you so much. Because I think a lot of times people are so turned off by like the word politics or like political, and really it's just it's really a compassionate thing. It's really just like a beautiful thing. It's just like a sharing thing. And so yeah, you know, music really does have that power to open people's minds.
Yeah. And you talked about breaking through the anger that you felt when you were kind of watching the early stages mm-hmm. of the Water Protectors at Standing Rock, and the song, I think it's so palpable, your feeling of basically pleading to anyone that will listen about mm-hmm. what's going on. And like, I'll be honest, that song got me through some really, really hard emotional processes that I was going wow. through. Mm-hmm. I had a radio show at the time, mm-hmm. and I was just playing it on repeat for months and months.
Oh, wow.
Seriously. I know that I speak for so many other people when I say that. I just wonder, I mean, did you even realize the connections that you were making when you wrote that song? Like, you were connecting people that mm-hmm. were there on the front lines, on the ground at Standing Rock, through words, lyrics, music that they could identify with in the moment, and also people, you know, far and wide across the world were able to get this message in a way that wasn't coming from a place of, you know, screaming in your ear mm-hmm. about an issue. And, you know, exactly like you were saying, that turns people off so fast. Mm-hmm. It was really coming from a place of just heartfelt understanding. Mm-hmm. And I mean, did you realize the connections that you were making?
No. And sometimes I feel like I'm still starting to realize, because people will like say things like that to me, and I'm like, it's just so overwhelming to me, because it's, you know, I'm just like a, you know, I'm just like a girl who sits in my room and writes songs all day. and then I upload them, and then like, I, you know, it's really overwhelming. It's really special to hear like different stories. And I think the day that I really kind of got a grasp on how much people were reacting to this song was, I was sitting in a car with a friend, or like a girl I met in New Mexico, during Gathering of Nations week. And I forgot my credit card or something. I forgot something at Starbucks, and I didn't have a car. And so she was working the event, and so she offered to drive me to go get my card. And in the car, she was like, oh, it's like so crazy to have you in my car. And I'm like, really? Why? And she's like, when we were at, because she was at Standing Rock for months, and she was working like the media tent for months and really, you know, putting in her work and being a true water protector. And she said that before they went out to an action, they would listen to my song to keep them peaceful. And that was just like, I couldn't speak. I mean, I'm like tearing up just like talking about it, but I could never even imagine that my words, my song, something I wrote, could have an impact like that on people who are really making such a difference in this world. And yeah, that was a really, really memorable moment. And I'll have like elders. I had like an elder come to my show like last week, and he said that, you know, that song like connected so many people and so many feelings. And yeah, you know, that it's really overwhelming. And, you know, being a mixed race, you know, I'm I am Indigenous. I'm also, you know, on my mom's side, I'm a completely different world. I come from, like, she's an immigrant, you know, so, like, I come from one side. It's like I've been brought up to know that my ancestors have been on this land forever. And then on my other side, I'm the first generation on my mom's side who was born in the United States. And so I kind of feel like a bunch of worlds within me. And so I could only hope that through my music, I could kind of bridge worlds, because I almost feel like that identity crisis of worlds being bridged inside of me every day. Yeah. So, you know, it's insane when I hear stories like that, because that's all I could ever hope to do with my life and with my music.
A lot of music outlets have called that song an anthem for the movement. How do you feel about that?
Oh my God, that's crazy. That's like, I feel it's not my place to even be excited or to be honored for it. Cause I really feel like that song, I almost don't even feel like I wrote it myself. I feel like that song was all of my ancestors and the people who have been a part of this movement, and every water protector, every single person who had a thought for Standing Rock. I really truly feel like I had really tried to channel all of those people when I was writing that song. So I feel like it being called an anthem, it feels right, because I really feel like that's a song that was written by all of us. You know, that's a song that's for all of us. That is like our song. And maybe I was the vehicle to like put it onto the paper and to sing it. But that's definitely like a song where I felt like my ancestors were like right there with me writing it. So it's just to have a song called an anthem is pretty crazy.
So, I mean, what kind of momentum do you think Standing Rock started in terms of environmental and Indigenous mm-hmm. issues? Do you think that momentum is still going? Do you think?
Absolutely. Yeah, I get this question a lot, you know, because a lot of people are like, you have so much hope, you have so much drive, but they're still building the pipeline. Like, how do you comment on that? Like, how do you talk about that? And I say, like, we started so much momentum. I just played at UCLA Law School for like a lunchtime concert in front of all of these these law students are going to be going off to do incredible things. I mean, they're in one of the top law schools in the country. And I was talking to my friend Alex, who I went to high school with, who's now studying to be a public defender. And she was telling me about how after Standing Rock, there is more interest in tribal law and environment law than ever in law students. And that was huge for me to hear, because that just shows that we are inspiring young people. And we are inspiring people to fight for Indigenous rights. And, you know, lawyers and getting more lawyers on the conservation of land side is so important. And that's such tangible proof to me of how much we've made a difference with the Standing Rock movement, despite the fact that pipeline is being built right now. Mm-hmm. And it's a continuous thing. I mean, the next time this happens, it's going to be even more of an outpour of support. If, you know, if there's something like this that, you know, the pipeline already leaked, like, there is so much more awareness for Indigenous rights than ever before. Things like this, things like we've had Standing Rocks for generations upon generations in my family, and in like the Indigenous community. And it really kind of, now that we're in this day and age of social media and of in being able to get the word out about something so quick with the click of a button, it's really caught fire to issues that have never been voiced before. And, you know, just the fact that so many more young people are interested in making a difference in this, it's only a matter of time that we're moving in the right direction.
Yeah, absolutely. And I, as you were saying, having environmental and tribal lawyers, like, everyone has a role to play in this mm-hmm. movement, and it can often feel so daunting and overwhelming, like, what can I do? Or, yeah. you know, I'm just this, I can't do anything. But I feel like when all of these cogs start to work together, you know, I mean,
absolutely,
you're a musician. You know, we need lawyers, we need organizers, we need support, you know, in all kinds mm-hmm. of ways. Like, I often feel that way, you know, like, I like making documentary films, and I'm like, yes, I can make a film about an issue and maybe raise some awareness, but, like, is that enough? Am I doing mm-hmm. enough? Mm-hmm. And I think that really just goes to show, yes, you mm-hmm. are doing enough. You can always do more, but never feel defeated by, mm-hmm. you know, what you're able to bring to the table.
Absolutely. 100%. And my, like, classic line, I always say, I'm like, you're either a part of the solution or you're part of the problem. There's no such thing as being neutral, being, you know, and so even if you're just the person at the table, the person at when you go out with your friends who corrects people when they say something offensive, who voices something when it's going on just to inform people, that's really powerful. And so many times we feel like we have to stay quiet, but I think more and more it's becoming really, really cool and awesome to be an activist mm-hmm. and really cool to be outspoken, especially as women. I mean, we are not silent anymore. It is not cool to be silent anymore. And I feel right now so empowered to be a woman. I feel so empowered to be a woman of color. And we're being, more than ever, our voices are being heard. And so just use that, you know, just use your voice. I mean, even if, you know, having a podcast, that's so powerful, but even if you don't have an outlet like that, if you have just people in your community that you can talk to and you can be a part of that. I mean, I'm a huge fan of this book called The Tipping Point. I don't know if you've read it.
No, I haven't.
It's incredible. And it's really about how, for better or for worse, how things catch fire, and it's always word of mouth. It talks about, these shoes, Hush Puppies.
I remember. Yeah.
Yeah. I and there are these, those. Yeah, these shoes, and that they almost like went out of business, the shoe company, cause no one wanted to buy them. Like no one wanted them, but then a few like, you know, young people in the West Village in New York City started wearing them. And then started telling their friends about them. And then it wasn't even an ad campaign. It wasn't a commercial. It wasn't anything but word of mouth that made those shoes catch fire and become so popular. And so it really shows, it's like, you don't need to have a million likes on Facebook. You don't need to have 100 million friends or have your own TV show or be a public figure or be a politician or be anything of that sort to make a difference, because really at the end of the day, the way to get the word out and to make a difference in your community is by word of mouth. And that book is amazing. You should read it.
I have to.
Yeah.
That sounds awesome. And you were talking about you in this day and age, especially for young people, you can't be neutral anymore. That's not an option.
You can. It's absolutely not an option.
And for people that have a platform established, like, I'm not even talking about, you know, the average person. I'm talking about musicians that have a lot of clout or artists that mm-hmm. have a lot of clout. Like, mm-hmm. where do you think their role is in the resistance and the environmental movement?
I think their role is so important. And if a public figure or a musician or actor is not taking the opportunity to stand their ground and to voice when they see injustice happening around them, I think they're doing a disservice. And it doesn't mean you have to be like in every moment, you know, saying something to shake everyone up, or, you know, it's not like you have to do that all the time, but it's just like when there's something in front of you and you choose to stay silent, I think it's unfortunate. And I think a lot of times people are like, oh, you got to separate art from your beliefs or from your this or from your that. And I'm like, why? Like, you're an artist. It's like, you know, so many people feel the same way you do and feel unrest and feel like they want to make a difference in their community, and they're looking to you to inspire them and to let them know that it's okay to feel that way. I mean, I can't even, like, music got me through the hardest times of my life when I'm like, even on like a smaller scale, when you're growing up and you're just like feeling angsty and you don't know, and you just like don't know who you are. You don't, you know, you don't feel pretty, you don't feel beautiful. And it's musicians who speak up for you, and it's your actors, and it's people in the public eye who you see every day who really inspire you. And so I think a lot of musicians have been taking that really seriously and have been speaking up more than ever. And I hope that they'll just continue to do so, because I think it's really important.
Yeah. And now that you have the platform that you have, I mean, you just have so much more opportunity to spread all the amazing words and truths that you care about. And we've seen a lot of things happen recently with regard to Harvey Weinstein and mm-hmm. sexual assault, and mm-hmm. A lot of things are kind of coming out from the woodwork, and mm-hmm. you know, yeah, like women are no longer being expected to be silent, and mm-hmm. I just think this is such a great movement. But my next question, mm-hmm. So have you always felt like you had a strong sense of activism mm-hmm. before the No Dapple protests, or before, I mean, was there a moment where you kind of changed your trajectory as an artist?
You know, I always say that I've always been an activist, like in my heart, but I didn't always see it as something that would go hand in hand with my music. just like, I look back and I'm like, it's almost so funny. It's like you have like the salt and pepper right in front of you. Mm-hmm. And it just doesn't enter your mind that they could be mixed together to make something really awesome. You know what I mean? Uh-huh. And that's how I feel about it. Cause I have always been an activist. I've always been extremely outspoken. I've always, been very active in my community and doing everything I can. Even in school, if there was something going on if I ever saw any sort of injustice, I was the first one to be like, you know, speaking up and doing something about it. And, you know, I've always been aware of Indigenous rights, having, you know, just grown up in my family. And I've always written songs, but I didn't understand. And I used to write protest songs in high school, just for fun. I don't even remember what I was protesting, more so just like protesting, you know, the man or like
whatever that means,
the institution. I wrote this song like in high school called like Fight Up Against the Wall, and it was pretty good. But after that, I really didn't put two and two together. I was like, okay, I have my activism and then I have my music. And I think In the River was like my first official kind of, you know, quote unquote protest song that I released, because it just, you know, when all two parts of my heart, like two parts of my soul just kind of meshed together. And then now that they're married, it's like, I can't stop. So it really was just like two parts of me that finally came together over the past year or so.
It made sense.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. And how does your family feel about your activism?
Oh, they are the best. I have the most supportive family in the world. My dad, you know, I come from a long like lineage of activists. Like my aunts and uncles were like marching in the streets during the war and like, you know, fighting for their rights as people of color, like from the start. And all my aunts and uncles are very active people. And my dad too, and everyone, I mean, I think I get it from them. But I think through this experience with my music and Standing Rock, I think it's activated them even more to participate. And my brother, he's an actor, and, you know, he's also in the public eye and very much uses his following and his outlet as a way to raise awareness for Indigenous rights and for anything. He's always the one to be saying something. So yeah, you know, I have an awesome family and they're super supportive.
Oh, that's awesome. I mean, I definitely have a supportive family too, but I've been in mm-hmm. situations when I'm trying to cover a story where mm-hmm. it can be a little dangerous or, mm-hmm. You know, you just kind of never really know what's going to happen. You know, and I have my mom's like, yeah, be careful. And, you know, that, but she recognizes that, you know, those mm-hmm. fights are the most important thing to me, and that mm-hmm. your family is so supportive of you, and your music career is really awesome. I'm so glad to hear that.
Thank you so much. But I totally know what you mean about some people have a hard time with certain things, you know, and the worst is when people like they know what I'm doing in my music and they think it's like cute. They're like, oh, that's nice. Like that's cute. You're like standing up for yourself. Like you're young and you're doing, I'm like, no, I'm like, no, this is not a hobby. This is like a lifestyle. This is an awareness that does not go away. Wow. And I always like, I'm like, okay, yeah, no. And then I'm always like, you know, just talking to people and being like, no, this. And it can get exhausting, but we just can't back down, you know.
I've been thinking about the news. Daddy leaves it on all day through. I've been thinking about the wars. And to be honest, I can't take it anymore. I hear you every day. The awful words you say, but hate can't be the face of the American dream.
How do you cope with, I guess, the stress of kind of being an activist 24/7? Like, I feel, mm-hmm. especially as a woman of color, I feel like I am fighting against the tide just by being alive, like in my body. And you are very active with your songwriting and creating content. Mm-hmm. You know, like, how do you cope with the stress of that? How do you manage, you know, your mental health with everything that's going on? Because there's so much happening in the world.
Yeah, it's a challenge. And I think as activists, we have to give ourselves that time. As a writer, I'm very introverted, but as like a human being, I'm extremely extroverted and I need support from people, you know, like my family and my friends. And when I'm feeling like really overwhelmed, I look to them. But also, I think it's good to like just focus on the task at hand and not get too wrapped up in the big picture, because it can swallow you and you just have to focus on like what you're going to do today to make this world a better place. What are you going to do tomorrow? And because if you think, you know, so much and you're compromising your own health, you know, to be voicing your, you know, your activism, it's a balance. It's truly a balance. And so, you know, some days I have to stay home because I'm like, I need to have my health first. And but I also feel like the activism for me, it fuels me, you know, it gives me strength. It gives me power. It gives me it recharges me. So it's a balance, but it also has just, I feel like, has made me a healthier human being, mm-hmm. being active and letting all that energy flow through me without letting it just stick to my body and not be spoken, you know, because when you have so much to say and you don't say it, that's like sticking to you and that's making you unhealthy. And so it's just good to get it out and just say it and just be a vocal human being. And stand up for what you believe in.
Absolutely. And you have, a lot of people have labeled you as an Indigenous activist artist. Mm-hmm. Like, mm-hmm. how do you feel about being put in a box like that? Because a lot of your music isn't focused on activism. Mm-hmm. It's personal. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you know, people will always try to label you, especially as a woman of color. You know, even like just female musicians, female comedians, female actors, people are always trying to like put them in a box to explain why they're doing what they're doing, or, and you know, it's not something that really bothers me where I'm like actively trying to change that, because if I'm going to be labeled as anything, an indigenous rights activist, singer songwriter is wonderful. You know, that's great. A lot of times people get confused and think that because I'm fighting for indigenous rights, that means that I'm, you know, I'm 100% Native American and I'm from, you know, I always have to explain, I'm like, I'm mixed race and I'm from New York City. You know, I'm a city girl. Yeah. With indigenous roots. And sometimes that can be really hard for people to understand. Like, it's like, how does that make any sense? But, you know, the history of Native American people is very, it's very convoluted. And my grandma, my ancestors were taken away from their tribe, which is why I live in the city, which, you know, sometimes I mean, every day I wish that that didn't happen to them, that they could have stayed on their land and grown up there, and who knows where I would be at this point in my life. So, you know, it's a box, but a lot of like my friends who interview me on their radio shows, they're always trying to explain like, oh, and she writes songs like this and that, and it's not just like one thing. But you know, I think that's just how it is, and everyone's always trying to put people in a box, and it's our job to, you know, to expand that and to show, because I'm a human being, like I'm a multifaceted, you know, mm-hmm. human, like woman, and I write all kinds of songs. I mean, I write love songs. Whenever I play my shows, I say, like, I'm Ray Zaragoza. I write love songs and protest songs, but I think they're pretty much the same thing. Mm-hmm. And because it all comes from the same place. And yeah, you know, a lot of times it'll be like the first headline on my articles. It's like, oh, like indigenous rights activist or like Native American singer songwriter. And so I always do my best to try to explain the whole story behind it as well, because, you know, it's we're humans and it's impossible to explain who we are in one sentence.
Yeah, absolutely. So I didn't know that about you, that you actually grew up in New York City. Mm-hmm. So was it New York City or New York, just somewhere?
New York City.
Okay.
Yeah, just like city girl.
So as a city girl, and you're living in Los Angeles now, how have you maintained a strong connection to the earth? And, you know, I always try to play devil's advocate for people mm-hmm. that are not concerned about the environmental movement. And, you know, I just, mm-hmm. I peg it to, you know, they haven't visited beautiful spaces before, mm-hmm. or they, you know, didn't grow up, you know, close to water mm-hmm. or, you know, anything yeah. like that. But clearly, I mean, you growing up in the city, that's not the case for you. You still have a very strong connection.
Yeah. Yeah, it's been like a definitely like a journey for me too, because growing up in the city, I was not around much nature. But we would, every weekend, my family would drive to Pennsylvania, and we like had a little cottage in the mountains. And I love that. I loved the mountains. I really identify that growing up was with like the Pocono Mountains, and with, you know, I just like love nature, and I would get lost in it. You know, I would just like stare out and completely lose myself, and landscapes and surroundings have always really inspired me, which is why a lot of my songs I write are about New York City, because it's the world around me, and that's how I grew up, with these buildings around me, and it almost makes me even more concerned for the environment having grown up in the city, because I see how much like humans have changed this planet. I mean, like Manhattan, like that is indigenous land, you know, that has been completely changed, and it's really sad. And I just want to preserve everything we have left, you know? So I think having grown up in the city can almost make you, it can go either way, you know, it'll make you hyper aware, or it can make you not even realize. But I think it definitely made me hyper aware, because I was always trying to get out and get into nature, or, you know, just always really taken by the world around me, and mm-hmm. I just want to preserve it for what it is, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And there's another song that I want to talk about, that I think it's probably my favorite song of yours, Red Moon, High Tide.
Oh, yeah.
I will definitely direct all of our listeners to everything that we've been talking about. But this song in particular was really powerful to me because Ray and another artist are singing on top of a parking garage, it looks like. In the foreground and in the background, you can see the mountains burning in some of those big LA fires that happened recently. It happens every year, but they were particularly bad this year. And it just goes to show how connected you are to so many different issues tied to the land. Red Moon, High Tide, talking about fire, talking about hurricanes and rising sea levels. I just think it's really cool that you're just so multifaceted in your activism, because a lot of times people can get so, they can focus so much on one issue, but there are so many different things that are going on that need attention to. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, I thought that song in particular was, you know, it was close to home too, because I'm from Southern California. So, and it speaks to people that were going through evacuations through fire, evacuations from rising seas and hurricanes. So, I just thought that was really awesome.
Yeah, that song. I was hanging out with my friend Madison, who wrote the song and performed the song with me, and she was just driving home. And she was like, oh my gosh, the fires are so bad. The moon has turned red. Like, the fire has been reflected onto the moon and it's red. And I was like, oh my gosh, like, that's so visual. Like, we need to write a song about this.
Red moon, silver sky. I look up as I drive by.
And then we just sat down and wrote that song. And during the time, you know, a lot of musicians are really stepping up and, like, donating their album sales or their ticket sales to the Hurricane Harvey and to all the natural disasters happening at that point. And so we thought, let's do our part. Let's write this song. We woke up at like 4 a.m. the next day and drove out there. That ended up being filmed at like 6 because we had to like find the right spot. And it was the first take, because as soon as that take was over, the sun was already up and you couldn't really see the fire through the camera. Like, you could see it very clear, but through the camera lens, you couldn't see it as well. And a lot of people like emailed us being like, I can't believe you went all the way out there just to do a video in front of a fire. And we're like, we didn't go anywhere. We are in the middle of Los Angeles. We were in the middle of the city. We were across the street from the mall. You know, we were at a parking garage for the mall. And it just shows that there were so many people who live in the middle of Los Angeles suffering from the contaminated air, from the fires, and had to evacuate. And it was really dangerous. And we just wanted to show that to people who don't live in Southern California, who weren't aware of what was going on. And I have a friend who I've been trying to raise money for him as well. He's in a coma because of the Northern California fires. He had a severe asthma attack, and he, because of the fires, he is in a coma. And it just really, it was really awful what was happening. And so we wanted to expose that to people. And we ended up raising $600 for different families who lost their homes in the fires. And we got like messages back from people who were like, they donated some money to them, and they were like really touched by it. And you know, because they have to start from scratch with their homes, and that's just so devastating. And so, yeah, you know, there's really, I think there's something special about writing with a purpose, you know, writing because you want a message to be heard, you know. And yeah, so that song is very special to us.
Yeah, and it just, it unfortunately goes to show that you don't have to go far to find environmental devastation and, you know, but also that you can make an impact locally in your community. Like, you don't have to go all the way to Standing Rock to make a difference. You know, you don't have to
travel. It's happening
far.
In your backyard.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, that's the unfortunate fact, but it's also kind of good motivation to get out
Absolutely.
There. I just want to kind of end our amazing discussion. I want to end it with like a little just, I'm curious to know like your first thoughts that come to what I'm about to say. So I'm going to read you some just a couple headlines from some articles, and I just want you to like react to them.
Sure.
Okay. So the first one, we kind of touched on this already. So this is from a CNN article. Keystone Pipeline leaks 210,000 gallons of oil in South Dakota.
Okay, so should I react now?
Or yeah.
I know. And it literally, all I can think of is, like, we told you so. Like, this is exactly what we said would happen. And it's never a matter of if they're going to leak. It's a matter of when. I just don't know what everyone is looking for. People are waiting for the waters to be on fire and for us not get, and for no clean water to come out of their faucets to do anything about it. Like, even, you know, it's like, okay, a headline like that, people are seeing that it's on CNN, and yet people still, it's just like whoosh over their heads, you know? And it's just so curious to me what does the public need? Like, what does everyone need before you're ready to start fighting for water rights? You know, because water is life and you can't survive without it. And everyone takes it for granted so much. And it's heartbreaking. It's very frustrating.
Yeah. The next one, it's actually from a Fox News article. Should be interesting. Flint water crisis. Some residents still unable to drink tap water 3 years later.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Flint, it's just, oh my gosh, it's so heartbreaking. And it's been 3 years, and it's like, they say some residents, but it's much more than some, you know, it's like, they're just trying to downplay it. You know, it's much more than some. There's so many children who are possibly permanently affected because of the Flint water crisis. And I just, you know, all I can say is that, again, it's like, I don't know what everyone needs before we start speaking up, you know?
Yeah. And I mean, I could go off on a little bit of a tangent. I won't, but, yeah, just talking about, how the environment and race are so interconnected, and where people and communities are placed is very strategic.
Absolutely.
You know, as we saw with the Dakota Access Pipeline and where it was rerouted from.
Yep.
And the community.
From Bismarck.
Exactly. Yep. Yeah. So, I mean, that's a whole another issue. But it's just the environmental movement is so tied to so many different things. And I think the point of this podcast is not only to highlight these issues, but just show all the webs that connect these things together. Okay. So,
it's all the same fight. And that's what we're always saying. We're like, everyone, we need to be showing up at every rally.
You can't just show up like, for one.
No, like, it's like, okay, like the Women's March was huge in LA. I couldn't even move, you know, I couldn't even move anywhere. It was like, it wasn't even a march because we filled out from where the march was starting and ending, you know, it was incredible. But where were all those people at our No Dapple rallies and at the Black Lives Matter rallies, which have a much smaller turnout? And, you know, I was incredibly proud of the Women's March. It was incredible. But, you know, we all need to remember to keep showing up to every single fight, because in the end, we are all fighting the same exact fight. Like you said, it is all connected. It is all, it's all the same. It's all the same. And so it's really incredible when we see people show up at this and that, and they're making their voices heard, whether or not that issue is something they believe directly affects them, which usually it does without their knowledge. But
absolutely,
but it's all connected.
Yeah. And, yeah, I mean, you just kind of summed it up, really. We're all on this planet, and yeah, regardless of whether you, believe that all these pipelines are a bad idea or a good idea, or that climate change is real or not, like we're all people on this planet that share this planet with so many different life forms. And I'm of the belief that Mother Earth will take care of herself despite what we do to her, but at what cost will that end up being, you know what I mean? And I would love to prevent a lot of the devastation that is sure to befall our existence as we know it if we don't do something about it.
And what is terrifying to me is how many people are just focused on making money in their lifetime. Like, oh, well, I, you know, I might be very much damaging Mother Earth, but it'll be generations before we see the outcome of this. And I'm like, interesting. So you're not putting your children, your grandchildren, your great grandchildren, that doesn't matter to you at all, you know, and the our ancestors and the generations to come, it's all connected. We're all connected. And if we're not fighting for them, then we're not fighting for ourselves.
This Standing Rock wasn't the first. It's not going to be the last big, gathering and movement for Indigenous environmental issues. But if there was, you know, just something that you could say to everyone that's, you know, put their voice, their bodies, in the line between, this fight for Mother Earth, like, what would you say to all of them?
And I would say just, like, don't give up, don't back down, just, like, keep being inspired, keep surrounding yourself with people who think the way you do. Don't let anyone ever say that speaking up is not needed or not making a difference, because it is. It absolutely is. And so just got to keep putting one foot in front of the other and keep getting out there. Stay in the streets. Stay in the streets.
And where can our listeners go to find more about you and your music?
Yeah, you can find everything you need to know and all the links at rayezmusic.com. It's Ray Zaragoza, R-A-Y-E. And yeah, check it out. I have my debut album came out in June of this year. So, and so, yeah, thank you for having me.
Thank you so much for being on the show. It was such a pleasure, and I'm really looking forward to all of the amazing art that you're going to put forth, and all the amazing things that you're going to do for your community and beyond.
Thank you so much.
Save the river, save the seas, save the mother and her family. How can you take what you want and say that we are free? If you put oil in the water, we won't sit quietly. And they were singing, stand up, stand up for what's right. Don't walk, don't walk silently to the night. Take my hand and we'll see us through. If you fight for me, I'll fight for you.
So that was my interview with Ray Zaragoza, singer-songwriter, Indigenous and environmental advocate, and all-around wonderful human being. If you like this episode of the show, please rate, review, and subscribe to the podcast on iTunes or the podcatcher of your choice. We really do love hearing from you. More information about Ray and her music can be found on our show notes page for this episode at wildlensinc.org/EOC135, as well as rayzmusic.com. That's R-A-Y-E-Z music.com. All of the music featured in this episode is by Ray Zaragoza, and I really hope that you'll support her work. This episode was produced by me, your host, Serena Simons. Thanks again for tuning in.